What I really wanted to play, Eric, was the 9 second silence when Murphy was asked about that play to lead to his ejection, but that's terrible for radio. So what I'll do is I'll play his response at the very end. Listen closely.
What else we got?
Yeah, he was over it. It's like, what else we got?
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee, this is Wisconsin's Morning News. In for Vince Petrano, here's Eric Bilstad.
Eric, along with Michelle Richards, Debbie's Got Your Rose, and Pancake Hill is here as well. He's going to help with sports today, as always. Appreciate that. Thanks to Vince, by the way. So Vince is off through the holiday. Did me a big solid. Gave me yesterday. He was supposed to be off yesterday, and he did me a huge solid by taking the day so I could see some family. So I really appreciate that. That's true friend right there, Michelle.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I spent some time over the weekend in Minocqua, also spent some time in Lake Geneva. And the one thing I noticed, and I'm not sure if it's because of this weird holiday week, but it wasn't super crowded at either place.
Maybe.
I thought Minocqua would be just boom.
Well, it's so weird with it, you know, the holiday falling on a Thursday. Yeah. Like, it's just kind of an awkward day.
We went to some fireworks last weekend, so it's like both ends of the spectrum here. We got both weekends going here. Hopefully spread out.
Yeah, I kind of like that. You know, I like to being able to stretch it all the way across. Maybe, I'm sure some people are taking the whole week. A couple of things I noticed up in Minocqua, other than that it wasn't crazy crowded, was the no bugs. Did not have any mosquitoes. Now, it's possible it's just an anomaly because of the weather. I mean, we had a windy day one day, and it was kind of rainy. It wasn't always a great, humid day of summer, so that might have played a role. But my wife and I went up there ready to rock. Like, we had, like, mosquito bombs and all kind of stuff ready to make sure we didn't get eaten. And it really was never an issue yet, perhaps. But I don't know. I keep thinking with all the rain, we're going to see something. All right. So if I look at the holiday here, Michelle, Thursday looks sunny. Sunny in the high of 84, so that should be a beautiful day. Wednesday, there's a chance for a little bit of rain in the morning, but otherwise, Wednesday looks clear. So any July 4th celebrating Wednesday night or Thursday should be good. Looks like there's a chance for some showers and storms maybe Friday and into Saturday. So for those who fire off the fireworks, I think you're good at least Wednesday and Thursday.
And I feel like Thursday, or 4th of July, rather, is always 95 and uncomfortable whenever I go to a parade. So I'm happy about this.
Yes, that's how it should be. Sunny in 84 should be a beautiful Independence Day. 6:14, lots to get to. The Brewers get walked off, but we got all the details on what happened during that game from Greg in a minute.
Now, time for a sports update from the Gruber Law Office's One Call, That's All Sports Desk. Here's Greg Hill.
Yeah, Brewers out west in Colorado opening up a 3-game set against the Rockies. All right, seriously, where do you want to start? So many storylines. Let's go with new starting pitcher for the Brewers of the season, which makes their 99th of the season. I'm sorry, 15th. 15th different starting pitcher of the year, albeit he pitched just one inning, but a starter nonetheless. A controversial call on the base pass. A 38-year-old hits a home run on his birthday against the Brewers, and of course extra innings. In the 10th inning, Christian Yelich, the extra man on second to start extras, steals third. It's Rhys Hoskins at the plate, and of all places to hit the ball, it's right at the third baseman.
The 1-1 pitch, Hoskins hits it on the ground to third. Runner breaks for the plate. It's fielded by McMahon. Throw home, tag on Yelich. He is out at the plate. Tagged out by Diaz. Over to third advances Frelick, but there are now two outs in the 10th inning.
So Josh did a good job of kind of covering that up, but it's literally screamed right at the third baseman. Yelich is already halfway down.
Yeah, what do you do?
You got to put your head down and sprint, because if he does go by into left field, then you scored the go-ahead run and you're in good shape.
Yep.
Yelich tagged out. We go to the Rockies' 10th. Two intentional walks lows the bases, and it's J.K.
Bases loaded, one out. The pitch, swing line drive into right center field to win the game, a base hit. It's a walk-off RBI single by Jake Cave, and the Rockies win game one in a thriller. 8-7, the final in 10 innings.
And that'd be it. Brewers dropped the first in Colorado in extras, 8-7. Game two this evening. Our coverage starts right here on WTMJ at 7:05. It'll be Dallas Keuchel on the hill for the Crew tonight. All right, how about some footy this morning? Also known as soccer for the pedestrian fan out there. USA men's national team falls in Copa America play to Uruguay 1-0. Big controversy is the one goal that was scored clearly had two guys offsides. It was reviewed. Nothing doing. Officiating terrible for the full time. Refs refused to shake Christian Pulisic's hand after the match. It was just a mess. It was after the words. Again, it's been met with some controversy before. It was not officiated well. So you go and you shake the officiant's hand at the end of the game. Pretty procedure. They wouldn't shake his hand. Like, they just looked at it. It was such a weird interaction.
That seems strange.
Like, okay, what are we doing? Like, did you really have some special interest here? But again, the offsides, it's atrocious. There's two men just standing basically next to the goal. It was so bad.
And for those who are not soccer savvy, right, typically the host team never loses this game.
Yeah,
right?
So this is basically the first round. It's basically the regular season, if you want to call it that, because it determines the seeding for the next round of 16. The USA hosted this Copa America tournament. They were playing everywhere. They were playing Arrowhead. This game, this is the first time the host city's never advanced past group play.
So there's that, you know, that unbelievable part. But then the idea of, like, taking it personal and not shaking a player's hand who has approached you to say thank you.
Yeah.
Seems really strange. He must have said something about his mother or something.
Everyone talks to the umps, and I'm not saying you can have freedom to say whatever you want, but they do get, you know, pretty loose in the lips if they feel opinionated on one way or the other. But, like, again, not to shake the hand, like, all right, the spotlight's on you, man. You were supposed to officiate this game, and it clearly didn't go well, and this is not a great way to end it.
What would he have said? I'm just curious. Must have been some Michelle Richards type of comment that she makes when her kids are playing soccer. Just way out there.
Your cuticles.
I am not that parent.
All right. Thank you, Greg. 6:19. It was an historic day in Washington on Monday. We'll walk you through it next. Vince Vetrano back on Monday. Eric Bielstad here along with Michelle Richards. So the Supreme Court has ruled that for the first time that former presidents have broad immunity from criminal prosecution for official acts. The court extended the delay in the Washington criminal case against former President Donald Trump on those charges that he plotted to overturn his 2020 election loss. Now, there is little chance that Trump could be tried before the November election. Now, he still has some challenges to face. We'll get to that in a second. You know, Trump, though, calls this ruling from the Supreme Court huge win. President Biden says
it's a dangerous precedent because the power of the office will no longer be constrained by the law, even including the Supreme Court of the United States. The only limits will be self-imposed by the president alone.
So if we break this down here, in a 6-3 ruling, the justices said that former presidents are shielded from prosecution for actions that fell within their official job duties, but do not have immunity for unofficial acts. The question, though, is what's considered official and what's considered unofficial. So this decision, will mean that Trump's election interference trials will likely be pushed. And who knows if there's even anything that could happen in those trials. Loyola law professor and former federal prosecutor Lori Levinson says, hey, there's still opportunities for the prosecutors in that case.
It is pointed out both in the majority decision and in the concurrence by Justice Barrett that a president doesn't have a constitutional role in certifying and counting the electoral votes. So it is possible that that will be an area where Jack Smith can show that this is a non-official act that should be subject to criminal prosecution.
She says there's still an opportunity for Jack Smith, the special prosecutor. A little bit more from ABC's Sarah Isger.
Prosecutors may make the argument that in this case, prosecuting the president for these acts would not impinge on any executive power that would hurt future presidents' ability to execute their job. It looks like many of the charges against Donald Trump related to January 6th would move forward under that standard
if they decide to move that way. Meanwhile, Trump's attorneys are now going after his hush money conviction.
Trump lawyers asking the New York judge in his criminal hush money case to throw out the conviction because the jury saw evidence that they believe should have been protected by presidential immunity. That according to a letter to Judge Juan Merchan described by sources to ABC News. The defense is asking for more time to make their argument that could delay Mr. Trump's sentencing scheduled for a week from this Thursday. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
Yeah, so if you remember, sorry about that, Chuck. If you remember, he was going to be sentenced on the Thursday before the RNC, which of course is here in Milwaukee. If it does even get postponed, or even if it doesn't, the expectation is still that the former president will be in Milwaukee for the RNC and to accept the nomination.
Which is just a couple weeks away now.
Yeah, believe it or not, yeah. A week and a half or 2 weeks now. It's crazy how quickly it's approaching. As for President Biden's campaign, following his performance in the debate, what happens now?
The campaign trying to shut down any talk of the president dropping out, saying that would lead to chaos. The campaign also sharing internal poll numbers with donors, claiming to show the president's favorability ratings in battleground states unchanged after the debate.
Yeah, just to say, saying to move to anyone else at this point would be chaos. That according to the Biden campaign. Now, First Lady Jill Biden told Vogue that they're not going to let those 90 minutes define the 4 years that he's been president. He is planning to be out more this summer. So the idea is, the strategy anyway now is, okay, let's get the commander-in-chief out there, have him meeting with the public, giving more interviews, maybe some more local interviews with different stations, radio and TV across the country in the next few months. ABC News also reporting that the Biden campaign called donors Monday night to say, hey, look, no, there's still a lot of opportunity for us here. So as of now, the president is in and is not going anywhere as we continue to move forward on this campaign. Brewers fall in extras and Pat Murphy is ejected again and still trying to figure out why. That story at 6:45.
Eric, there is outrage.
Outrage?
Outrage over chicken, rotisserie chicken,
ooh,
to be more specific, at Costco.
Okay.
So, you know how a rotisserie chicken normally comes packaged, right? In that kind of clamshell container, hard plastic.
The plastic, yeah, and it's nice and warm, and you can use it. And you can bring it home and fire it up and be the hero for the kids.
Right, they love that stuff. Because it's good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now Costco apparently has changed its packaging to a plastic bag.
So it's a bag instead of the hard plastic
shell. Instead of the hard plastic shell that you just open and it clicks together. So now it's like a not a Ziploc bag, but like it, you know, it kind of zips shut at the top.
So, okay, so it's not like just a crappy little plastic bag to
not like what you get at the grocery store.
Okay, all right, so it's an actual like pouch. Thing.
Yes, like a pouch. That's
so what's the problem? Why are people upset about it?
Well, first of all, the company is doing this because of savings on plastic. So they say that it's going to save all this plastic. But customers are arguing that the bags are leaky. They're less good for storing leftovers. And it's harder to pick out good chickens.
Oh, you can't look at it because it's hidden in the bag?
Ish. I mean, you can still see that there's a big window. You can still see the chicken.
Is that your go-to for rotisserie, Costco? I got to admit, I kind of like the Sendix ones.
They are, yeah, usually. Well, Sendix is a lot closer to home for me, so if I'm making something for dinner.
So I'm trying to think of, can you recycle? Do you recycle the clam shell?
Yes, that's another argument that customers are saying is that you can recycle the clam shell, but some states do not allow you to recycle the bags.
This will be a little strange to carry a bag out like that, because you're right. Like, especially when you put it in the fridge, then you got to dig your hand in there.
Right, and you don't get bags at Costco. You have to put everything as is in your car, or you have to get a box.
Right. Okay, well, I can see the argument there. Although we like to complain about anything that's new, so give it a couple of weeks. We'll still get our chicken.
It'll be fine.
6:39. Wisconsin's Morning News. Eric Bilstead along with Michelle Richards. Vince is off today. So we got to see inside the former Northridge Mall on Monday. WTMJ's Adam Roberts sent him that way, so he got to do the tour of what is eventually going to be demolished. And he was able to speak with the Milwaukee Department of City Development project manager Benji Tim about the site there on the northwest side. And Tim explained how a lot of these fires have taken place. They've had deals with vandals starting fires inside the empty mall, and he described that.
There's multiple locations you can see fire damage, scorched places. A lot of times they'd use the planters as fire pits just to burn things. And sometimes they'd push debris material into the center of the mall or throw it over from the balconies, and then they'd pile it up and light it up, and then they'd use the fire extinguishers around the building to put out the fire. There's one video actually that's on YouTube where somebody dumped accelerant down the steps and then lit it on fire. You can see the remnants of that fire right there.
Yeah, we have a picture of that situation of the steps that were lit on fire on the YouTube page right now. You can see that in the video. So vandals just being bored, causing destruction, doing whatever they were doing. So now the mall is going to come down. Like I said, Adam was there, so much more. He's on Wisconsin's Afternoon News today, so we expect to hear much more about his time at Northridge later on today on WTMJ. It is 6:44, so Pat Murphy was ejected from the Brewers game on Monday night. The question is why? That story next.
Now, time for a sports update from the Gruber Law Office's One Call, That's All Sports Desk. Here's Greg Hill.
Brewers out west in Colorado to open up a four-game series against the Rockies. Game that had it all. A new starting pitcher for the Brewers, albeit one inning. Still a starter. That's 98 starting pitchers this year for the crew. Just kidding. 15. Still 15 that leads MLB. A 38-year-old human hitting a home run off the Brewers on his birthday. And, of course, a Pat Murphy ejection and extra innings. Well, there's no shortage of offense. 7-7 heading into the bottom half of the 10th, where it was Jake Cave at the plate for the Rockies.
Bases loaded. One out. The pitch. Swing line drive into right center field to win the game, a base hit. It's a walk-off RBI single by Jake Cave, and the Rockies win game one in a thriller. 8-7, the final in 10 innings.
Yeah, so the ultimate result of the game was a loss, but let's not brush over the Pat Murphy ejection, all right? Came in the fifth inning. It's 3-3. Joey Ortiz puts a beaut of a bunt down. It's fielded by the pitcher on the first base side. The pitcher attempts to then make a tag on Ortiz. Ortiz avoids it, kind of does a little shimmy, gets around it. However, the ump rules him out. He said that he ran outside of his established base path. Keyword established there. So he's called out, but why? He looked like he would definitely stayed in his base path. Murphy went on to get an explanation. There were some words exchanged, and he details postgame.
The first base umpire said that he went more than 3 feet away from the player. You guys watched it. You would know if that's true or not. In my judgment, I felt like he didn't go more than 3 feet away.
Okay, 3 feet, right? That's how much an area is allotted for a runner to go in their established base path. That does not mean the base path that is drawn from the box, the batter's box, to first base. Keep that in mind. Okay. So checking in on the official rule book, per rule 5.09, subsection B, paragraph 1.
Nerds!
Runners are allowed a move of no more than 3 feet out of their path to avoid a tag with their base path established when the tag attempt occurs. Again, how he leaves the box, how he runs out, the furthest that he runs away infield, like towards the pitcher, 3 feet from there is how much he can run out, right? Okay. We're getting in the minutia here. I know it's ridiculous, but it seems like it's a little, it was not in the three, whatever. Again, it was ultimately, it made the difference, but not really, because transitive property doesn't work in sports. What I really wanted to play, Eric, was the 9 second silence when Murphy was asked about that play to lead to his ejection, but that's terrible for radio. So what I'll do is I'll play his response at the very end. Listen closely.
What else we got?
Yeah, he was over it. It's like, what else we got? On. We're done. Let's move on. That's how it ended. Brewers Rockies game two of their four game set. And tonight, our coverage starts tonight at 7:05.
You know, one of the coolest things about the Summer Olympics or the Winter Olympics is when you hear about the local people, the local kids, the local athletes who are doing great things. Well, we have one for sure, and we have others that are heading to Paris. Lori Nickel details next. One of the coolest parts about the Olympics is when you hear about the local kids, right? But the wide range of ages that some of these athletes are. You know, some are teenagers, others are up there. And we got a local kid who's a veteran, you could say. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Lori Nickel joins us. Hi, Lori.
Good morning.
So Stephanie Robel, she's headed back.
You know, when you think about sailing and maybe Olympic sailing, I wonder if people in Wisconsin think that those sailors come from, you know, Rhode Island or California, Florida, Texas, but the fact is that the Midwest is really well represented. But even then, you know, it's not Lake Michigan, it's not Lake Mendota. It's Stephanie Robel from tiny little East Troy, Wisconsin's Lake Beulah. And the 35-year-old is going back to her second Olympics in 3 years because, of course, the 2020 games were delayed a year. So she raced in 2021. And she is racing against a lot younger people, that, 10, 12 years younger than her, but she's so fit and in such great shape and so mentally sharp. Her world ranking is like 2 or 3 right now. So she's in a great spot.
Her partner is the same age too, right? Like, and they've been together for quite some time.
Exactly. So Maggie Shea is from Chicago, and they knew each other. When you do inland racing in the upper Midwest, like Chicago and or Illinois and Wisconsin, you get to know each other. And these two have known each other since high school. So I would say probably 15, 20 years or so. But they've been racing together in this competitive class for, I believe, 8 years. And they have just been through a lot. They've gained so much experience, particularly in where they're going in France. Marseille, France, the marina there, they've raced there so much in the last year or so. They're really familiar with each other, and they're really familiar with the racing venue. It won't be in Paris. It'll be, obviously, in the South France.
Is there a reason, Lori, why Midwesterners would have success other than just because they're who they are? I mean, is it something to do with, I don't know, practicing more on fresh water or anything like that, or the Great Lakes being amazing?
You know, Stephanie Roble talked a lot about, you know, the sailing season here in Wisconsin is a lot shorter. You know, that Lake Beulah could be frozen over until March, late March, for sure.
Yeah.
But it's a spring-fed lake, and it's this beautiful, and it's a strong racing community. There's a regatta out there almost every day. If there's wind and no lightning bolts, kids are out there racing. And I'm talking about 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds. They look like they're in little miniature bathtubs. They're in these little boats out there. And that's when she started sailing. She started sailing very young. There's a toughness that comes with it. There's unpredictable weather and weather changes. The weather changes the wave patterns and how you have to sail tactically. But Stephanie really credits the community. It's not just her parents who supported her so much, but it's extended family, the yacht club family, the people on the lake, the people within the lake communities around all over Wisconsin. That really fosters this competitive energy and a high skill rate. And she just took off with it, for sure.
Is this a trend we're seeing, you know, lately, I guess, with older athletes competing? You know, Simone Biles is 27. When you think of a gymnast, you think of, like, you know, a 16-year-old,
teenager,
yeah. Right?
I think that's a great question. And, excuse me, there's a couple of facets there. First of all, some of the rules have been changed. Thank God we're not sending 14, 15-year-olds over. There's some age requirements in some sports. But in Stephanie's case, she's worked really hard in the gym to stay fit. And you can do that now. We've seen it in pro football here in America. Why wouldn't we see it at the Olympic level? There's a trade-off, though, between some, you know, athletic skills, being fast, having quick reflexes and all that. And those are things that you actually need in a tiny little sailboat like Stephanie's. But you make up for it in so much smarts, experience, predictability of understanding what you're going to be expecting in your race class or your sport. So I like that diversity there. There used to be a theory that the age of 40 and over, you were in a master class. You know, you're in a master's age group. You're so old, we're just going to call you a master's. But that's really an antiquated phrase now, because we're seeing athletes in their prime in their 30s. And I think that will continue for sure in all sports, whether it's speed skating, especially the endurance athletics, and certainly in something like sailing.
The Journal Sentinel's Lori Nickel has the story in JS Online. Stephanie Roble, the star skipper from the pristine waters of Lake Beulah in East Troy, headed to France for the Olympics. Looking forward to it. Should be good. Thank you, Lori.
Thank you.